And welcome back. Thanks for listening to Food Nation Radio. I'm Michael Serio, executive producer. Special guest on the line with us right now is Bill Fries. He's the science policy analyst for the Center for Food Safety. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
We have in the life of this program, going back now almost 9 years, had one big enemy, and that is Monsanto and glyphosate, Roundup, and then obviously the seeds that are produced that resist Roundup. And it's been a struggle. It has been a struggle since day one to get some testing, honest testing, about the safety of this product. But now the dam is finally breaking and we're starting to see some results as to the safety of this product. Bill, the news isn't good, is it?
No. You know, it's really interesting. Just a brief thumbnail sketch. Glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, it was introduced in the mid-70s. And, you know, for years, Monsanto did, an enormous amount of PR trying to convince people that it was perfectly safe and, you know, both for humans and for the environment. I think the facade of safety was first cracked in the 1990s. And maybe you heard about this, Michael, but the New York State Attorney General twice found Monsanto guilty of false and misleading advertisements for Roundup, saying it was biodegradable, practically non-toxic. So I think that was, you know, a harbinger of things to come. Mm-hmm. You know, in the 2000s, there's been really good studies showing that some Roundup formulations are quite toxic to amphibians like frogs and tadpoles. And then, you know, to bring it up to the present, there's more and more research showing, you know, hazards to human beings and particularly cancer.
In the state of California, there was a landmark lawsuit that was settled back at the end of 2018. And if I remember right, he was a groundskeeper, had contracted non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And they pointed right back to the fact that it was his continued exposure to Roundup, to glyphosate, that actually caused it. Where do we stand now?
Yeah, you know, the cancer issue, it first came to, you know, to public attention in 2015 when the World Health Organization's, you know, cancer authorities, these are the world authorities on cancer, they labeled glyphosate probably carcinogenic to humans, which is, you know, their second highest rating. It's very, very clear evidence. And basically, they looked at animal studies where animals were fed glyphosate. They looked at epidemiology studies, right? Farmers and other folks who use glyphosate. And then also what are called mechanistic studies where you expose like cells to glyphosate to see if it can do things to those cells that are, you know, cancer causing. So, you know, this assessment was just like really groundbreaking. And of course, it sent Monsanto into, you know, full on defense mode.
I would say a tizzy.
A tizzy, yes. You could say that as well. And, you know, unfortunately, EPA has been so heavily influenced by Monsanto and their studies that they've pretty much backed Monsanto's view of things. Fortunately, though, we do have, you know, good science. More and more studies are coming out showing that EPA and Monsanto are wrong. And the world's health authorities are right. So, you know, as you mentioned, there have been a lot of, you know, class action lawsuits against Monsanto, particularly for this one type of cancer, non-Hodgkin lymphoma, which was the one that was found to be elevated in applicators and farmers who were exposed to it in at least three epidemiology studies. I think this is, you know, really important, these cases. You know, clearly the exposure to this herbicide, the evidence is pretty overwhelming at this point.
Now, you mentioned in an email exchange that we had before the recording about a new study that just came out that said that non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is especially popping up in farmers at an alarming rate. Explain, what was that about?
Yeah, you know, there are actually two studies that have come out. The one you're referring to, just a week or so ago, basically the scientists looked at, epidemiology studies that have been done in the past, and they did what's called a meta-analysis, where you basically take an overall look at the data from multiple studies, right? And what they did was, in contrast to past meta-analyses, they said, well, let's look at the farmers, the applicators who are exposed to the higher levels of glyphosate. And then it became very clear, you know, even clearer than it was before, right, that glyphosate was causing, you know, this particular really awful cancer. It's a cancer of the immune system. So, yeah, that's a real, you know, it's been in the news. It's an important study. And then actually a second study that came out just a week or so before that looked at what's called genotoxicity assays. And that's where you expose cells and in some cases animals to glyphosate or to glyphosate formulations and look to see if, you know, the changes are caused in those cells that are typical of cancer. And that study, again, shows that the great majority of these genotoxicity assays, and there have been over 200 done, do show that glyphosate can cause these, you know, make these cancer-causing changes in cells.
One of the problems has been that Monsanto has viciously fought any kind of testing, especially as it pertains to the seeds. But now we're starting to see these results pop up. Are these tests being done in the United States or outside?
We're seeing them all over. You know, and actually one important thing is that in many cases the evidence comes from even a lot of the studies that were done by Monsanto or by people they hire. If you interpret them properly, they do provide evidence of cancer. It gets into questions of interpretation. But yeah, no, it's the you know, there have been studies done all over the world. You know, a lot of them are being done in the U.S. You know. But yeah, so it's really, you know, I think groundbreaking what we're seeing here.
Is there a chance that this product could eventually be recalled and pulled off the market as being cancer-causing and unsafe?
Well, you know, you mentioned the seeds that are resistant to Roundup, and Monsanto introduced those in the mid-1990s. They're called Roundup Ready is the brand name, and basically they allow Roundup or other glyphosate formulations to be sprayed on the growing crop, right? Glyphosate would otherwise kill those crops. So what this did, the introduction of these crops, and now they're very widely used, soybeans, corn, and cotton, they've made Roundup the most heavily used herbicide in the world. So that, I think, is going to, you know, that's going to be, makes it a big challenge because so many farmers, unfortunately, have become dependent on this Roundup Ready system that involves spraying a lot of glyphosate or Roundup. So I think what's more likely to happen is we could have more action on residential uses. Roundup is also used widely residentially in other glyphosate formulations. Ontario provides a really good example of how you can, you know, through civic action at the local level, you can get changes in, you know, get you know, sensible restrictions on pesticide use. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, that to me is kind of hopeful. It will be more difficult in farming, I think, to really ban it. Hopefully, I think we can at least get some restrictions. But, you know, the truth is, Michael, there are, you know, Roundup is and glyphosate are big deals, certainly. But there are a lot of other pesticides that are used that are also harmful. And we need action across the board.
Well, we also need an FDA and a USDA that isn't in the back pocket of Bayer, Monsanto, and all these companies. That, I was hoping, would change on January 20th, 2017, but it hasn't. It seems to have gone the other way, and it's gotten worse. I was really hoping that there would be a sea-level change in Washington, but no, not at all.
Yeah, the Environmental Protection Agency, it's, I think, the agency, some of the divisions are pretty good, you know, like the Office of Air or the Office of Water, you know, a lot of those folks are doing good work. That the pesticide people, it's you know, been a problem for a long time because the way the pesticide law is written is very tilted towards the pesticide industry. And you have a lot of people who aren't, you know, who are just too much in bed with the industry, unfortunately. So
it's part of the revolving door between the industry and the government jobs, and that has not changed.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, it's true. And, you know, I think we're, you know, we're raising awareness of kind of the harms and the dangers of pesticides. And we just have to continue working on all fronts, you know.
All right. Here's a final question for you. Now that we're seeing these lawsuits pop up and being adjudicated, at what point does Monsanto stop bearing the sole responsibility for damages? And when do the municipalities who spray this on bridges and on playgrounds, when do they start becoming responsible, knowing that they used an unsafe product?
Yeah, no, those are good questions and really big questions, and I can't, you know, provide, you know, definitive answers there. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I think, you know, there are examples at the local level, at, you know, the municipal level, or even in the case of Ontario, you know, at a provincial or state level, where there have been restrictions placed on pesticides, and that only happens through, you know, citizen action. So
is that what happened in Ontario, that citizens raised up and said, we don't want this stuff used, you know, in our community?
Yeah, in that case, and I'm not an expert, but they basically started with, and this is actually pretty valuable, the idea that cosmetic use of pesticides, they really focused on that as being the least justifiable, right? So if you're just spraying to get rid of a dandelion, for mm-hmm. instance, it's like, that's not, you know, that's not worth it for you know,
for
against
health
of the kids who are playing, mm-hmm. right, on that field that's being sprayed. So I think that's, you know, kind of a good model. I'm sure there are others that, you know, and so yeah, I think we need to really, you know, look at those examples. There's an insecticide, really bad insecticide, chlorpyrifos, that that was proposed to be banned under Obama's EPA, one of the few good things that they proposed to do. It was reversed, unfortunately, under Trump. But that was banned for indoor uses around the year 2000. And that's, you know, because people, you know, really made an issue of it. Unfortunately, it continues to be used in agriculture.
We are making progress. It's just very, very slow, and it's very frustrating. It's got to be frustrating for you as well, right there on the front lines.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be overly down. I think it's pretty amazing. I wouldn't have guessed 3 or 4 years ago that, you know, there could have been such progress on glyphosate, you know, in bringing it, the risks to public attention, and, you know, also the lawsuits, which I think are going to have a real impact.
Bill Fries, science policy analyst for the Center for Food Safety. Thank you for the hard work that you guys are doing in getting the word out, and keep it up, and we'll keep telling the story as well.
Okay, great, Michael. Thanks for having me.